Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 16th, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I'm feeling good this week, finally healthy again.
Yeah, great. Keep your bragging there.
Took a long time. Actually didn't feel good right up even into the home game. Had to leave the home game for the first time ever when I wasn't broke. Yeah, usually I leave because I'm broke, but this time I had to leave because I just could not do it. I didn't feel terrible.
And trust me, your absence was not ignored.
Oh,
nor
really?
Nor was Dr. Frank's. After you guys both skedaddle, the wife comes in, "Hey, who's winning?" And we're like, "The two guys that just left."
Yeah, Frank and I got together beforehand and said, "Okay, we're going to take all the money, then leave."
I'm pretty sure that's what was going to happen. You probably took some Skittles as well, too.
I've been sick since we got back from the Dominican Republic and just couldn't shake it, and it was up all night. But we had our good friend Bit Guru in town and wanted to play with us, and I did not want to disappoint him, so I stayed for 4 hours. That's 4 hours. I mean, that's still a long time until I was ready to pass out.
Hey, you'll get the poker sickness badge at the next Cub Scout meeting.
That's right. Thank you very much. So did anything happen while I was gone?
Not too much, because we didn't have any enough Skittles on the table, really, for anything exciting to happen.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, huh. I appreciate the fact that Big Guru came over and played, staying in Orlando. That was a hefty little drive for him to come over just to hang out with us for a day. But
yeah.
Always good to see him. Usually good to see him on the cruise ship, so it's nice to have our listeners show up in the home game once in a while. But this situation did come up after you left, I think, or maybe even while you're here. It doesn't really matter, I guess, but... in stud, somebody dealt one of the down cards up.
Uh-huh.
Now, have listeners from last week's show know that I let you all know that in the tournament I played out in Vegas, that was declared a misdeal because it could alter who has the bring-in, even though none of us really truly believe in destined cards except for you, Chris. So, never wanting to be proven wrong, you immediately got off the show, probably even while we're on the show, and began to do some exhaustive research this with Ante Up's crack research team, and you've uncovered one of these frustrating loopholes in poker law, have you not?
Yes, I wouldn't call it a loophole, as I would call it two perfectly different sets of rules. and I take offense to the fact that you thought that I didn't want to be proven wrong. That's not true. It took me hours to think about the show, and now hours later, I'm like, oh, you know that stud thing? It really bothers me, because why would everyone do that and everyone be wrong? So let me look it up. So I looked it up, and of course, we play cash games, or Skittles games, and I went to Robert's Rules, which everyone uses that. And sure enough, it says that the starting hole card dealt face-up and stud will be replaced with the third street card. Only in tournaments is it considered a misdeal. And the other thing I found very interesting about it was it said it also says that if the card that is facing up would have been the low card, then the player to the left is actually first to act and has the option to just fold right there without putting any money in or to bring it in. Which, it's peculiar, and I suppose if I gave it any thought, I could figure out why they did it that way. But really, it's such a peculiar thing, you know, and everything is just so random anyway. It's like, okay, the figure, because you can't penalize the person who has been screwed by this, because it's not his fault the dealer turned the card upside down by accident. Right. So then the person next to him can't get screwed. That's why they give him the option to fold. But then what if nobody, you know, does it keep going down the line and nobody wants to bring it in? Then the last person gets the money for free, I guess. So kind of weird. But yeah, I'm glad we weren't doing something stupid for the last 6 years or 7 years or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say we weren't doing something stupid. We were doing something not in violation of Robert's Rules of Poker.
Yeah.
But I got to say, I really like the way the tournament ruling. The more I thought about it, I think this is one of those situations, and we're not going to rehash this whole thing since we talked about it last week. But I really think this is one of those things where you just really don't think about it when you're doing. I mean, all those times in the home game, we've been doing this way for years, right?
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, okay, well, it's up, you know, no big deal. Just do the next one down. And so when it was explained to me at that tournament, I'm like, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. Now, again, I don't believe in the destiny of cards and all that stuff, but it's a little different in stud when, again, this is the dealer. Again, I'm not picking on the dealers. Dealers make mistakes. But dealer altering the game by pitching a card up when it should have been down.
Right.
And I think it should be, in that sense, those cards, the destiny of those cards is a little different than, I think, than the destiny of cards in Hold'em, where you're just getting two random cards to start with. Here, what cards you get actually influences whether you put money in the pot or not.
Okay.
And I think that's a big difference, so.
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you.
I'm sure you will.
But not on the stud part of it. Let me ask you this. I think that if it's a missed deal, that's fine. I really don't have a problem with it. And I don't say that what we do with Robert's Rules, you know, how we've been doing it is right or wrong. It's just that there is a rule out there for us to go by.
We're just abiding by the
rule. But let's put it in what you just said, and now transfer it to Hold'em. You said that in stud, it affects who puts money in the pot or if they want to put money in the pot or anything of that nature. Well, to me, let's take a different type of misdeal in Hold'em. They've dealt the first nine cards at a 10-handed table. The 10th card goes face up. What does a dealer do? The dealer grabs a card and says, there's your burn card. I'll give you another card when it comes around at the end. And he deals the rest of the way and then deals that person the extra card. I'm sorry, but that face-up card now affects everything.
Well, it does affect it. See, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it affects the obviously the play. I mean, if you have one of those cards, then, you know, let's say you have a pair of fours in your hand, and then that exposed burn card is a four now. Now you're probably not going to put money in the pot because one of your two outs is gone, right?
Right.
So it certainly affects the play, but you're not being compelled to put money in because of that dealer error.
But no one else is either. You don't have to put money
in. Right, but stud, you are. Stud, somebody is putting money in. So let's say you were supposed to, if it was dealt properly, the hand was dealt properly, all the cards were dealt the way they should have been, and you had the deuce of clubs, right? You're bringing in, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, had the dealer dealt your first card up by accident and then ended up having to deal that deuce of clubs down, that dealer just saved you a bring in and made somebody else at the table have to put a bring in it.
Ah, but see, that's where you're wrong. With the rule,
I'm not
clearly
wrong with that.
Yes, the rule clearly states that no one has to put money in if they don't want to. After that mistake is made, the person to the left has the option of folding or bringing it in. So if he folds, now it's on the next person. You don't have to put money in either. You can fold or bring it in. It goes all the way around. So again, you are not forced to put money in this mistake error. Just like with Hold'em, you're saying, I see the four clubs. I have a pair of fours. I've decided now I'm not putting money in. It affects who's putting money in. Or the other way around. It could be, well, that guy doesn't have an ace because he was dealt an ace face up, so now I likelihood that another ace is out, I'm going to put money in because I have kings. You know, it totally, both errors affect money, I think, and both errors affect each way equally. Just
okay,
a different
so maybe
way.
I misunderstood when you explained this. So if there is any card that's exposed in the first round of stud, mm-hmm. everybody gets a get-out-of-jail-free card is what you're saying?
Well, according to the rule, it says that. It says, if the card was face up, and it would have been the low card.
Nah, see, if it would have been the low card,
right.
That's what I'm saying. But
Oh, so you're saying that if you had the two of clubs and you didn't get it dealt to you face up, but the guy to the
exactly, then right, no one knows that I should have been the bring in, and somebody else is unfairly being charged the bring in because of that dealer error. Whereas if you do a misdeal, then no one's unfairly being punished, other than the fact that obviously, you know, if you're rolled up or something like that. But that's the same thing in Hold'em.
Yeah, I guess that's what you're saying. But even so, I mean, it's such a semantic there. I mean, I understand what you're saying, though.
It is
so
a semantic,
rare.
But again, think about it, and this is why it's done this way in tournaments and cash games. They probably don't care so much. And, you know, what if I'm a short stack in a tournament, late in a horse tournament, and this happens, and you should have been the bring-in, but now I get the bring-in because of dealer error, and now I'm forced to come in and put all my chips in because of a dealer error. That's a problem, I think.
Yeah, but you're never going to know because the card was face down.
Well, you're not going to know, but I mean, it should be proper.
You know, but I'm just saying, I don't care. I wish there was a misdeal.
You would never know. I mean, what if that guy ends up calling you and you guys go all the river because you're all in, and then you ask him, hey, what were your down cards? Hey.
We're talking about the odds are, you know, this is like incredibly ridiculously odds, but that's fine. I think there should be all misdeals, though. I've always felt that way.
All right. We'll see. We just spent 26 minutes getting back to where we all agree.
Well, the thing about it, though, is that it saves time when there's no misdeals.
It does.
And, you know, I'm the rarity here. I'm the one that believes in the Destiny card. So, if, you know, that's why I would want the misdeal, because I believe in the Destiny card. Because I think that King of Spades that came to me that went face up, I should have that card. And since I don't have that card, this isn't fair. Let's misdeal. Let's redeal. Let's misdeal. So, I agree with you. I think that I would love for it to be the tournament way, but it would suck too if, you know, everybody's got three, you know, two cards and everything, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh my god, I got pocket aces and Hold'em, and now this guy's dealt this one face up at the end when it's just a random card, or even stud, you know. Yeah. But I do like the rule that you can keep dealing because it's face up, just because of the fact that it saves us a bunch of time and effort and money. In stud, but yeah, I would prefer all misdeals, to be honest with you, just because.
Excellent. Well, I say we make a concerted. We'll bring this to the floor for a vote.
Okay.
For the next Annie Up Home game, and we will make this tournament rules rather than Robert's rules.
We'll make it Annie Up rules. See, now it's got a double connotation there. Annie Up rules. Annie Up rules.
Oh man! But you know, hey, I love when I get the chance to get on somebody else's radio show where I don't have to come up with the questions,
right?
And someone gets to ask me the questions. It seems to be a lot easier that way. So last week I was a guest on the Division of Poker radio show. Our great Ohio ambassador Dan Harkinrider is one of the co-hosts of that, and they recorded up at those ESPN studios in Cleveland. Pretty cool. And you know, I love being a guest anytime, but I will say, you know, this was I got the call like 10 minutes before air, and it was like, hey Scott, I had a cancellation, can you fill in the last minute? Sure, Dan, no problem. And then I started thinking about it. You know what, it makes me think back to high school.
Why?
You know, where I was the pretty girl, you know, you want to go to prom? Oh, wow, that's very sweet, Scott, but I'm going to wait and see if I get a better offer. But if I don't have anybody else ask me out, I'll give you a call on prom night. Okay, that sounds great, thanks.
You know what, you would take it that way. This is a total honor that Dan is bestowing upon you, that when someone falls through, he can go to you and rely on you for not only being there, but being a quality guest on his show who can speak not intelligently, but who can speak about things in poker. I think that you take this all wrong. I don't know why you get insulted so easily. This is a beautiful thing. We've become, you know, so popular in the poker community that, you know, people automatically think of Ante Up when they need a problem solved. This is a great thing, Scott.
Hey, I'm a glasses half full kind of guy.
Plus, who the hell are you kidding? Nobody in high school asked you to the prom.
That's what I'm saying. I had to ask them. So. All right, but anyhow, it was actually a very fascinating interview. We talked about a lot of stuff, and you can go listen to it on their website, which I believe is divisionofpoker.com. But one of the things that the conversation started out, they were even telling me before we got on air, they're like, you know what, we're just so disillusioned. This is right after Jamie Gold's bracelet sold at auction, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're just so disillusioned that it just seems like all the headlines about poker are negative. Is there happy stuff about poker that we can talk about. Where's the happy stuff going to come from? So, of course, I used it as a nice plug to mention, hey, Anti-Up Magazine, that's all we write about is happy stuff.
That's right.
But then it moved into, you know, kind of talking about just kind of the state of poker and how the public views poker and poker players, which is a conversation, obviously, you and I have had on the show quite a bit, right?
Yeah.
And then Dan's co-host came up, and he's like, you know what? What I really think we need, Scott, is when I'm at Thanksgiving dinner, and Aunt Martha says, poker, huh? Really? You play poker. We need, as poker players, we need to have a very brief, concise, but effective boilerplate answer to give folks like that that really sings the praises of poker and minimizes some of this other stuff that I think the public kind of looks down on poker for.
Like, yeah. Is this sort of like a mission statement or just a slogan?
I don't know if it's a mission statement because I don't know if Aunt Martha really wants to fall for a mission statement. But I think the point was that, you know, a couple things. One, that when we're in the poker community, like any community that you're in, you get kind of insular, right?
Yeah.
And you don't really think about how to explain this to the outside. You know, when I was playing Dungeons & Dragons when I wasn't getting asked to prom, you know, you know, how do you explain, oh my gosh, it's the greatest game ever. Well, no, people were looking at it and like, no, you're just a freaking nerd. So you got to find a way to explain it that's not insular. So I think that's part of it. But the other part is just, you know, letting people know that this is not, poker's not a bad thing. You know, it's like anything else. I mean, there are negative things that can come from poker, but poker inherently is not a negative thing.
Right.
You know, millions of people play it every day, have tremendous enjoyment. Some of them play it for, you know, a few Skittles on their kitchen table, no harm, no foul. Other people obviously play it for $100,000 buy-ins. So it's a wide range, but, you know, it's not something to be feared. It's something to, it's just like any other recreational activity. And we did talk a lot about, you know, golf tournaments and fishing tournaments and how there's really no difference other than we're playing with cards and they're playing with fishing rods and golf clubs, you know?
Yep.
So I think that was really kind of the crux of it, is how can we intelligently explain that to someone quickly enough that we don't lose their attention and don't have them think that we're whitewashing them and making them pretend that this dirty, seedy thing that we do is not as dirty and seedy as they think it is.
I think I've got it.
All right.
Poker. Presidents played it. It's good enough for you. Presidents play it, right? That says it all right there. They play it in the Oval Office or wherever they played it. All presidents play poker. And if they're playing it and it's legitimate for them, why isn't it good enough for me?
All right, so here's the thing. I've been using that argument for years because I'm a big presidential buff and historian and love it. And I respect the office of the presidency. The problem is, these days, I don't think a lot of people respect the office of the presidency. It doesn't matter who's in there.
I know.
You know, so, oh, yeah, great. You know, all those crooks. I mean, for example, one of my stock answers were like, hey, Richard Nixon paid for his first congressional campaign by playing poker. And they're like, yeah, look what happened to him. I don't think we can go down that road anymore, unfortunately. So I don't know. I'm not looking for an answer right now, but I'd like to see whether the nation can come up with a stock little boilerplate thing there that maybe they've tried it out on their friends and family and it's worked.
100 words or less.
Oh, it's got to be less than 100 words.
All right, 50 words. It's got to be 50 words. No more than 50 words.
Yeah, probably even less.
At least not. Yeah, because we don't want to be a slogan, but we don't want it to be, like you said, a mission statement either. You want to find that happy meeting.
You don't want to have, like, you know, Roman numerals and, you know, little A's and B's and stuff. You know?
Subsets.
Yeah. You got to be able to remember it. You can't have it, you know, you don't want to tattoo it on your arm. You're like, hold on, let me refer my notes. Oh, yeah, right. Here's why I like poker. All right. It's got to be something that comes naturally off the top of your head. So.
All right. That sounds fine. Hey, you know, we've been dialing back a little bit of what we've been selling on the show because we want people to just enjoy the show. But we have to tell you that when new stuff comes along, it's pretty cool. And, of course, giveaways now have started for our March 30th Any Up Poker Cruise out of Los Angeles. That's right. We're California bound, baby. Woo!
I love L.A.
Win a poker league at Wendover Nugget near Salt Lake City in Utah. All right. So let's get it straight. We don't want, because I don't know if we even have people in Utah listening to us. Do you think we have people in Utah?
We have a ton of people in Utah listening.
We do.
Jason Hawley from J Design, our official playing cards, lives near there.
Yeah.
O'Malley, I believe, is from Utah. Is he not?
Okay, so two. And they all work for the show.
No. We get there's some other listeners there. I actually think this is a awesome opportunity for those folks in that poker desert
drought
of Utah.
Yeah. All right. So if you live there and you win that league at Wendover Nugget in Reno, right? It's Reno?
No, it's not. It's in West Wendover. It's right on the border of Utah. That's why I mentioned Salt Lake City. Otherwise, I would say Reno.
Well, if you win that league, you're going to be sailing with us. We have more details at antiupmagazine.com/leagues. And we have giveaways for other cruises that are continuing at Dover Downs in Delaware, Jackson Ranchera in California, Presque Isle in Pennsylvania, and the Texas Hold'em Poker Tours right here in Florida. So more details at antiupcruises.com.
All right, and each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 813-448-1120 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we will send them something absolutely fantastic. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo, and ask about the AntiUp logo version, and never forget to use code AntiUp if you want free shipping. And this week, it comes from Ryan, and he says, "Hey guys, love the new format." Aw, thanks. I was wondering if you could do a show on past main event winners. For instance, you could discuss people who you thought would be bigger and more popular from their big-name tournament results, or just who was a quote-unquote flop, pun intended. Wah, wah, wah.
Well, a couple of things I find interesting about this. One, he says he loves the new format, but then he says, "Look, we'll bring back a topic to do the whole show on." And we're not doing that anymore, so very interesting. But could we discuss it on the show? Absolutely. I don't know if I'm prepared to do that today. But,
well, we don't have to go through every main event winner over the past, you know.
I don't even know who they are anymore, Scott.
Well, maybe that's the point then. If you don't even know who they are, they obviously haven't gone out and done great things afterwards, right?
I guess that would be true, because I can't remember. I mean, Greg Merson, I guess, is the last one I remember.
Yeah. And then it was just last year, so.
Doing all right then so far, but. And then before that was that Pius kid, right? I don't know. And then after that, I'm lost.
Well, I mean, I'll give credit to Peter Eastgate. He kind of did some charity work, and then famously, quit poker. So that was kind of interesting. And then I think you have to go back to Jamie Gold, which obviously we mentioned at the top of the show. Obviously, didn't do much after that. Got a lot of endorsement deals, but never really did much play. But then I don't know whether anybody really expected him to either. Mm. I think, rightly or wrongly, he did garner the respect for his poker play that some other champions did, right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he hasn't done anything since then except, make a couple of appearances on High Stakes Poker when the show was around and lost money. But other than that, he had that little flame out with Tropicana being there. It was his poker room or something there. But no, I agree. The best thing about Jamie Gold winning was his mom came on our cruise. That was about as good as it affected us. But there are very few champions now that are, putting together runs for bracelets or WPT titles like they did. Look at how much Raymer does
I was thinking like the Raymer Hashem years were
Hashem, yeah.
At Moneymaker were probably good years for champions that they were able to keep in the spotlight.
Yeah. Joe Catta had a couple of decent runs, almost won a bracelet, I think, again a couple years ago or whatever. But really, there are, this November 9 really kills me. It really does. It's trying to make it so that we all remember who they are, and it's making it worse for me. And the poker coverage just started last week, too.
Yeah.
Well, actually, this week. I don't know when people are going to listen to it, but I didn't even watch it. I watched Doyle win a nice little pot, and I was happy that I knew that he had cash and stuff and whatever. But I just couldn't watch it. Well, mainly because I'm just so damn busy with the magazine this week. But really, I know I don't know. It's a great little topic that he's come up with for us here And I think the point's been proved that, you know, we don't know any of the people anymore. We haven't heard them do anything significant, so that tells the story right there, really.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jerry Yang did a lot of charity work, too, as well. But, you know, again, he was a champion that I don't think a lot of people gave a lot of credit to his actual poker play.
Right. And I think that's a product of the enormity of the tournament now.
Yeah.
You know, you're never going to find... It's very difficult when you put 6,000 people in a room to have the absolute best poker player in the world to really win the best poker tournament in the world and then have the best tournament future and poker future in the world as a result. It's just too many things have to line up, like Scott's stud rule there with the... So, I mean, really, it's a very difficult proposition. So whenever these guys actually do anything after the tournament, like Steve G, that was remarkable. The run he had where he makes an over 9 and then finishes like 24th okay. this year. Now that, you know, if he had won the whole thing last year and then did that this year, that would be all we'd be talking about right now.
Yeah. It's kind of like what Raymer did, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I mean, I still remember Helmy was coming up to him and saying, hey, you know, you're talking the tournament this year.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think really kind of the problem now is that there's two things. Ryan's kind of insinuating at some point. That's a strong word to say, but I mean, he's saying what I think a lot of people are thinking, that once you win and you become the world champion, everybody, you know, is going to judge you on your poker play after that, which I think is a little unfair for the point that you make. You know, I mean, anybody can win one tournament. You know, even though it's a $10,000 buy-in with 6,000 people,
right.
I think the people that are going to be remembered are the ones that you don't have to go out and win 12 more tournaments as world champion. But if you go out and do a lot for the game of poker, then I think people are going to remember you. And that you can completely control.
That's fair. That's totally fair.
Yeah, you can just totally just go home and enjoy your $8 million or whatever, and never be seen from again. Totally, you're right, but obviously you're not. No one's going to remember you then. Or you could travel the country and doing charity events or something else, and you know, give back.
There was a time when boxing was like that. You remember whenever a boxer, you know, would win the world champion, and he was like, you know, he was like the most famous person there was. I mean, think about it when Muhammad Ali was touring. You know, the world, everyone came out to see him.
Yeah.
You know, or in the work he did do, and even Tyson and those guys, the last, you know, he was, to me, Tyson and maybe Evander Holyfield were like the last two very people that you remember. Like, who has the title right now?
Yeah,
who knows?
Yeah.
But back then, it was just like, wow, and it wasn't just because they fought every 6 months to retain their title, but I mean, you know, they toured, they brought awareness to things, they, whatever. And, yeah, if the poker champion this year does that, I'm kind of hoping JC Tran wins, just because, one, I know he's a cool guy, but two, I'll remember him.
Yeah.
You know, I'll remember him. He's a bona fide pro with all kinds of accolades and bracelets and everything. So, you know,
but I think that's part of Ryan's point, that some of these other names we don't know right now, right?
Right.
But if they immediately come out of the gate after they win it and force us to know their names, then we will know their names, right?
They need to do that if they're not gonna play a lot, or if they're not gonna take down titles, then they have to do something else for us to remember them.
Exactly.
All right. If you find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcastandannie@magazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager Jody Russell tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is J-Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up. Check out J-Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. This comes from Chuck, _53. It says, I was at a casino, and during a wash of the cards, I noticed that one of the cards had a very noticeable mark on the back. It looked as if someone had taken steel wool and scrubbed the back of the card, removing some of the color off the back. I immediately requested a change of deck. The dealer obliged and placed the defective deck in the rack in front of him. When the next dealer arrived, she grabbed the defective deck and began shuffling. I informed her of the problem, and she said that the automatic card shufflers had a tendency to mark the cards. I told her that this table didn't have an automatic card shuffler and that I wanted the deck to be taken out of play, or at the minimum, the other deck to be put back into play. She refused to do either. I went to the front desk and asked the poker room manager. The manager examined the card and said it was okay. Three hands later, however, he returned with a replacement deck. When I was leaving, I stopped by to thank the manager for changing the deck and to apologize for creating a scene over this. He said, "I doubt you could pick that card out of all the other cards." I told him, "I can pick it out, and I know it's the Ace of Diamonds." He had no response to this. I'm not sure if the apology was necessary, but I want to go back to play there, and I don't want to be treated like dirt the next time I show up.
All right, this is what Jody says. He says, "This is an ongoing debate between poker managers and players about when cards are actually marked to the point of being identifiable and when they are just a bit worn. The decks used in poker can be very expensive and are kept in use for months at a time. Players deserve to play with cards that aren't uniquely marked. Managers and supervisors sometimes have players, or worse yet, dealers, who want to replace cards' decks when the slightest of marks are seen. Shuffle machines do mark cards, but they all get marked equally, so there's no issue. When you do see a card that has unique marks, it is always okay to ask for a different deck, and dealers should always comply. I'm sure the manager you were dealing with values your business, which is why he changed the deck view."
A couple of things. One, I would have, when the second dealer sat down and grabbed you that deck, I would have stopped it right there and said, no, that deck is ruined. The other guy just forgot to take it out of play. We need a new deck to replace that one. Or I would have just, I would have just made it so clear that they couldn't use that deck instead of, like, being sort of passive about it and letting her, you know. And then even at that point, when she says automatic shuffle card shufflers aren't, you know, make the mark, whatever, and he said that there isn't one at the table, that doesn't mean anything. That deck could be in a card shuffler at another table at one point and then just circled around here. So that doesn't matter. But the other thing is, whenever I hear a story like this, I always think of when Andy Block was in the World Series and there was something like this where they didn't like the cards, or the cards were getting marked, or something was wrong with the cards, and they wouldn't do anything about it, so Andy ripped the card in half.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm not saying to do that. It reminds me of, hey, look, I'm playing for my money here. You're going to get your money no matter what you do. If that card is marked and the other cards aren't, it needs to come out. It needs to come out. I don't care if shufflers make marks. If they make the same marks on all the cards, that's one thing. But we're dealing with 51 cards are normal and 52 isn't. We need to deal with that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I'm of two minds on this as well, too. I mean, one, I do think at times players are a little hypersensitive to this, and that they see markings that aren't really markings. Particularly, I mean, I don't want to keep going back to this easy answer of the automatic shufflers, but in every room I play in with automatic shufflers and they have cards with, you know, kind of designs in the back, they're all worn. Some might be worn slightly different than others, but I don't really think that you could tell the difference between them. And you're right, I mean, cards are very expensive, and, you know, if every time the slightest mark is noticed on the deck, that the deck has to be destroyed, I'll tell you what's going to happen is that, you know, the cost of poker is going to go up in your room if they keep having to throw away a deck every single day instead of getting, you know, a month or two or 3 months out of it, you know?
Yep.
So I think you have to be a little careful about being insistent on it, and think about it. I mean, the marks that I'm really, when you talk about steel wool here on the back, I don't know any card cheats, but I'm going to say if there was a card cheat, that they wouldn't be marking it that, blatantly. You know, they would be finding some other mark that's a little harder to see, right?
Yeah, but that's not the point. The point is, that marked card is an Ace of Diamonds, now everyone knows that marked card is an Ace of Diamonds.
Okay, but I guess my point is, I don't know whether you could say that's the Ace of Diamonds.
Well, yeah. he was confident it was. I don't know.
Well, looking at it, yeah, but I mean, but again, you're talking the steel wool in the back, and I'm not trying to pick on Chuck here. I mean, he was there, he knows what he saw, and it was clearly identifiable. I totally believe him, but generally speaking, I think there's probably a bunch of other cards in that deck that had similar steel wool looking markings on them because of the shufflers.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know.
Steel wool looking thing doesn't happen in normal play. You know, that's a mechanical thing that happens at some point. Whereas card cheats, usually you're using, you know, their fingernails or something like that to put very small creases in it. But all that being said, I mean, you certainly should mention it. I think the other thing, too, is I don't know whether this dealer was just placating him. But it's not enough for me to have them just take the deck out of play and put it back in the rack, because the next dealer is going to do exactly what this one did. Sit down, they're supposed to change the deck, sit at their down, and put it right back in play, you know. So that's just a temporary fix to the solution. Really, I probably would have been pressing them, you know, hey, you really should take that out of play.
Yep.
And at that point, maybe the dealer said, yeah, all right, sir, I was just trying to be nice and get it out of play for you now, but I'll tell you right now, they're not going to replace this deck, so you're just going to live with it. Or bring a floor over and slow the whole game down. But that was just treating the symptom rather than the problem by putting it back in the rack. So.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about before, is that I would have been like, no, that's got to come out. You know, you can't just put it there, because you know what's going to happen in 15 minutes. So that's a shame, you know. But I know what he's talking about. I mean, I've seen, I know what he's talking about with the steel wool, too. And that usually is from an automatic shuffler, because of the way the wheels are rolling on it, and it's constantly wearing in the same spot over and over and over again. And the inks do end up coming off the backs of things. But, I don't. And the other part about his letter, too, is he didn't know if an apology was necessary. I don't think he needed to apologize for insisting on having a non-foul deck, or whatever you want to call it.
No, I mean, I think he handled this well. He mentioned it to the dealer. The dealer took it out. The next dealer came in. She said, you know what? I'm not going to do it. Part of that's procedure, probably, in some rooms, you know. And, I mean, I guess I would have asked her to call the floor, but he actually was more respectful to his players at the table and just got up and did it on his own.
Yeah.
So, which is perfectly fine. And, you know, the manager gave him his opinion, and then ultimately either changed his mind or just said, hey, it's not worth having this player upset with me. I'll go replace it.
And then one last thing, too, is he took the high road. He could have not said anything to anybody and said, I know the Ace of Diamonds is that card, and I can use that information myself and not let anybody, you know what I mean? He chose to take a deck that he seemed was compromised and take it out of play. So, I mean, he took the high road the whole way. So, nice job, Chuck.
Absolutely.
All right. We got a brand new O'Malley's move this week. Let's hear it.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're still at that same $1, $2 typical no-limit hold'em cash game. We rebob for another $200 and sit with around that. The under-the-gun limps, plus one folds, MP calls, MP2 folds, hijack calls, cutoff calls, and we're on the button with the jack of diamonds, nine of hearts. This isn't a great hand either, but with $11 in the pot, we're going to take a flyer. We limp. The small blind limps and the big blind checks. Seven of us going to the flop, $14 in there, and we see the queen of spades, jack of hearts, jack of clubs. That was a fortunate flop. Unfortunately, it gets checked all the way around to us. We're set up quite nicely. We decide to make a stab, hoping it looks like a button steal attempt. We make it $8 to go. It's folded all the way around to the cutoff, who calls. This opponent is a new player to the game of poker and has been getting lucky all night. He's got a huge stack, easily covering us, and loves to chase any kind of draw, even putting the pressure on when he has one. There's about $25 in the pot, and the ace of clubs comes on the turn. Suddenly, the cutoff wakes up and bets the pot, $25. It's to us. What's our move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is Smapsoff, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes store. And this week's comes from Liam. Liam?
L-I-A-M. Yeah, Liam. Yeah, just think of William, but it's Liam. I grew up with a kid.
Well, if I was thinking of a William, it would be William. It's not William, it's just...
It's Liam. Yeah, it's Liam. It's short for Liam.
Oh, okay.
All right. I grew up with a guy named William.
Did you?
Yeah, he lived right behind me.
Was his name William?
No, it might have been, but his nickname was Liam, but he's Liam.
Oh, man. All right, so Liam is setting the bar super high this week, Chris.
All right.
Very first words of his Hand of the Week are, the most amazing hand ever. Amazing in all caps.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, all right. I was just saying, he's putting himself out there, right?
Yeah, it sounds like it.
All right. He said this occurred in a 5-cent, 10-cent online game.
Already, it's already not the most amazing hand ever.
It could be. Maybe he normally plays 1-cent, 2-cent.
Oh, there you go.
A big game for me.
Yeah, it is big.
Over the session, he was 6 tabling. All right, so I'm a little more impressed here.
Wow.
I was about even and not running too well in the big pots. Playing 6 max, which I love. Mm-hmm. And we're in the small blind with $22.08. And, you know, he's from England, and I think it's interesting that he's converting to dollars for us.
Oh, that's cool.
It could be pounds. Playing, buying, doing hand of the week in pounds, right?
I guess.
So he's got $22.08 of good old Yankee currency. And it is folded to us, and we have the ace of diamonds, jack of diamonds.
All right, it's 5-cent, 10-cent?
5-cent, 10-cent.
It's fold to us.
6 max table.
And we don't really know much about anything here. We just know...
I'll go ahead and tell you a little bit about the villain here. The villain, we played 90 or so hands against. He's quite tight, but has yet to fold me when I have tried to steal. His stack is just over $10.
Okay, so...
We got him
covered, and he likes to fight us, right? So... that's a pretty good hand, 6-handed. And how many people folded, you said?
Everybody.
Everybody's folded us, and where are we?
Small blind.
So it's just mano
a mano.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to want to raise, just because if he does want to fight me, I'm going to at least want to have the control of the hand. And we already have 5 cents in, and he has 10 cents in, and I'll make it like 35.
Okay.
I mean, I maybe even more, just because... I wouldn't mind taking it down right now and just moving on, because I'm going to be out of position against this guy who likes to fight us the whole way. So, but maybe 35, 40 cents.
Okay. Our hero decides to raise to 30, which he says is a standard raise at this table.
Yeah, and that sounds about right, you know, ABC.
Yeah. And the villain, of course, which we just explained, flat calls us. Doesn't just call us, flat calls us. Well, foreshadowing, probably.
Yeah, a little foreshadowing, probably.
In fact, the call, I don't really... I think it's tough at this stage to really know what that call means.
Yeah, it could be just...
I mean, most people defend their blinds, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Too early to do that.
All we know is he just doesn't have a completely crappy hand.
Right.
Well, I guess he could.
And he doesn't completely believe us.
There we go. That's what we don't know.
All right,
the flop comes at 10 of diamonds... 9 of diamonds, queen of spades.
Wow.
Couldn't really ask for too much better here, could we?
Oh, wow. So we're open-ended, nut flush draw, and an overcard.
Ace-high flush draw.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, we have the jack, so we have the top half of the...
Yeah.
Whatever else could happen there, but yeah.
That's
right.
True.
You're right. But yes.
So we have
ace-high flush draw.
6, 7, 8 of diamonds.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yep.
Now, here's the deal. Again, we've been told that the guy is kind of tight, but he won't fold when we bet to steal. But I don't know if that means
steal,
that translates.
Yeah. I don't know whether. I don't know about C bets here. But.
Interesting. I guess I would bet.
We're not going to want to check it.
Yeah, no.
Play fishy here, right? We're going to give him a shot to maybe raise us.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. We took advantage and control of the hand by the fact that we were first into the pot. So I'm going to bet like 40 cents because there's like 60 or so in the pot. So 40 is a decent bet, I think. And we'll see what happens.
Okay. Let's see. Our hero says, obviously, a very nice flop with a lot of equity. I decided to check, which looking back was a debatable decision, intending to call a bet.
Well, just for the record, anytime you have a choice between things, it's always debatable, whatever you choose. So, I don't disagree with the check. If I knew this guy would bet, because I love my hand and I want to get some value for it, and then even if I miss, I can still sort of take it away because of the fact that I've taken control of this hand so I can have anything, and it's that, you know, it's that incomplete information that leads you to winning hands without having to have the best hand. So...
I think you're going to do the same thing either way. Is kind of where I'm thinking. I mean, you want to be able to raise this player,
yeah.
Right? So it doesn't matter whether we bet out or whether we check, whether we get the opportunity to raise necessarily. You know, obviously, if he checks behind us, then we've lost some value.
Right.
But you know, if you're checking, hoping that that's going to induce him to bet so you can raise, I don't think it's any different than if you bet into him. If he doesn't believe you, he's going to raise you, and you're going to get to re-raise him.
Yeah, I agree.
On balance, I think you're giving up a street of value by checking.
Exactly. I think you need to get some. Plus, the whole fact that you know, it looks awful fishy now that you've raised, said you had a pretty decent hand to raise against the blinds, and now a decent amount of cards come out, and you don't bet them. I mean, yeah. The whole point of you raising was that you're saying you have a good hand, you're taking control of this hand. Now you give up that control? Nah. I mean, a check raise, if he bets now, you're going to be like, wow, that worked, I'm so brilliant. But if it doesn't work, you're going to be like, why did I do that? Let me think about how I've played this hand from the beginning, and I should have bet. So I would have bet, but he checked. So what happens?
All right, we check, and the villain bets 3/4 of the pot.
Nice. All right, well, now we raise.
Yeah, so it ended up working out for us, right?
Yeah. Now we raise and we get either him to fold because we check raise, or we get it all in because we got the ace high flush draw and opening a straight draw and an overcard. So
all kinds of stuff going on, right?
Yeah, I don't mind getting it all in if I have to with this guy with $10 and I got over 20. No problem.
All right, well, our hero decides just to call. Since he wants to slow play what could be a monster hand by the turn.
That's weird.
Well, I mean, the problem with that, obviously, is, and again, I get this. I see people do this all the time. The problem is once that monster hand shows up, it's so hard to get people to pay you off on it. So,
yeah.
I mean, a lot of this is the kind of stuff that you really learn but if you switch over to Omaha, is that you got to get the money in before you got the goods, because when you get the goods, you're not going to get the money.
Yeah.
It's pretty scary at times, but, I mean, on balance, you're going to make a lot more money that way.
Well, what's funny is that we sort of foreshadowed this hand when he said it was the most amazing hand of all time, and you just said, well, it's going to get hard to have somebody to pay you off, but we can only imagine what might happen now,
right?
You know, the turn and river, so it's tough to really analyze his hand knowing what's probably coming, but I would have raised there. The reason I checked is so that I can get some more money in and tell this guy that I don't care what you have, I can check and still be ahead of you or not worried about what you have here. So I don't like the check call. That's kind of weird. It's really fishy to me. If I'm the other guy, I'm like, wait a minute, you raised preflop, then you check called on this flop? What do you have? You can't tell me you have king jack here.
Well, yeah, and here's the thing. If you check call here and then one of your cards hits and you bet out, then you might as well just flip your cards up and say, hey, look what I got.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, king jack maybe have played it that way. Maybe would have played it that way. But other than that, what other hand plays that way? So, I don't know. I don't like the check, and I don't like the call. I'd rather have just bet and see if he raises then, just re-raise and gotten it all in. But, okay.
Excellent. All right. Well, the turn is the Queen of Diamonds. Who predicted that? Raise your hand. So our board now is the Ten of Diamonds, Nine of Diamonds, Queen of Spades, Queen of Diamonds. And obviously, we're first to act again.
Okay, so we have a ace high flush, but the board is paired, so we don't have the nuts, but we have an out to the nuts.
You do, yep.
The king of diamonds. So I can only imagine that's coming. Or even
the eight of diamonds would not be the nuts, but would be better than a boat or quads. So.
Yeah, so... yeah.
So I mean, we have two outs to beat. A better hand, I guess, is the other way of looking at it.
So unless you're afraid of somebody actually having the eight of diamonds, now even that doesn't matter because they can't. Unless you're worried about somebody one outing you with a smaller flush here, you really you have to worry about the full house and the quads here. So because you only have outs to beat them, you're not ahead right now. So you're still not, you're still not in the clear yet. This guy had something like queen 10, queen 9.
What's really funny to me is this hand is playing a lot like an Omaha hand, isn't it?
Yes.
We just talked about the last street, how you need to get your money in before you hit. Now you hit, but you don't really feel good about it.
Yeah.
Because it could have hit somebody harder.
Yeah.
But you still have outs to get even better. I mean, it's like a skinny Omaha hand. Omaha skinny.
Omaha light. okay, so hands we can rule out probably of this guy are queen-queen, because he probably would have re-raised pre-flop. He wouldn't have just flatted. Although we did say he flatted, so he could have quads. Queen-9, yeah, I think he might defend with queen-9. Queen-10, most certainly he could defend with queen-10.
Sure.
Yep. Ace-queen, probably not. Probably would have re-raised with ace-queen. King-queen, maybe, with three queens, and we're ahead. But, you know, a hand that he defends with, king-jack, that's possible. And he flopped it and then bet it to protect his hand. You know, so it's possible he has a straight here. It's possible he has a full house here. I mean, we could be ahead or we could be behind, which is always, you know, the obvious answer. But I think I'm going to check again, believe it or not, now, because now if I bet, it looks fishy. It looks like, oh, we've made our hand, and like you said, your hand's face up. But I'm also a little cautious that if this guy...
Yeah, it opens us up to trouble, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I mean, might as well control the pot a little, right?
Yeah, it's kind of the weird thing is that, you know, we both would have played this hand very differently all the way through. And now at this point, based on the way we played, I think the only play you have is to check. Just continue to check.
Yeah, yep. Because how could you bet now? It looks like it's so obvious. And, of course, if he has a bigger hand than you, now you're drawing to one out. Or the eight of diamonds, too, I guess. So that's two outs. So,
yeah.
You know, you're basically drawing to two cards if you're behind. If this guy's got a boat or quads, you literally need to hit one of two cards in the entire deck to win. So I don't want to bet myself out of this pot. I want to get the showdown with it somehow. So I'm definitely checking.
Exactly. Yep. All right. Well, that's what our hero does. Sticks to the plan of slow playing and check, although it's not really slow playing in my mind now.
No,
now it's defensively checking.
Yep.
And the villain bets $1 into our pot. That's now $1.50.
Yeah, I call and see what the river brings and see how he, you know, I mean, you know, if we hit our miracle, whatever you want to call it, not miracle, but, you know, whatever, then we might want to open it up in the end, whatever. But I don't like raising here just because if he shoves, I mean, we can call the shove. We've got him covered and we've been doing well at this table.
But we're unnecessarily risking that money.
Yes. So why not just call?
Yeah, exactly. Our hero decides to raise to 250.
Hmm.
Fortunately, our opponent, well, I should say fortunately. I think fortunately, based on the decision that you and I would have made not to raise here, fortunately, our opponent just calls. So it doesn't put us to a test.
Well, that's good. I mean, so now we don't know what to do.
I mean, if I got a boat or quads here, this is the way I would play it now. You're going to raise me? All right. Well, I'll just... Now I'm inducing our hero to bet into me again on the river.
Yes.
You know, if I raise here, now then they got to think about it. Maybe he was trying to make a move and now he folds. We don't want that to happen. You know, if he really does think he's awesome, then he'll shove, and that's great. But I think we're taking a risk. I think you got to call here. And then, you know, obviously the guy's going to, our hero's going to bet into us again, and that's the best way to get value now, I think.
Yep, and the other thing, too, is what's really tricky about that call is that it's exactly how King Jack would play it, too. Because King Jack would say, all right, you may have gotten a flush here, but I can't fold my straight, and you may just have three queens, you know, so I can't get out of the way here, but I'm not going to raise you. So this guy could be check call, you know, call, then check call, you know, calling, and then calling again on the end. With the straight, so it's very, very well disguised. No matter what he has now,
exactly,
just calling. So a very interesting hand now. Turned out to be interesting. I don't know if it's the most incredible hand ever, but it's pretty interesting.
Well, it's not over yet.
Oh yeah, it's true.
And he didn't say incredible. He said amazing.
Oh, amazing. Okay, yeah.
All right. So he says he calls and he says, does he have just a queen? Maybe straight, or did I just let him hit his boat, leaving us pretty much dead? If he has the full house, we only have one out. But is it possible to fold the nut flush if a brick comes off? Actually, I think we said we had two outs, right?
Yeah, the eight of diamonds now will give us a straight flush, too.
Should also help us. Pot 650, and the river is, wait for it, the king of diamonds.
Royal flush.
Our final board is 10 of diamonds, 9 of diamonds, queen of spades, queen of diamonds, king of diamonds, as he says, the nuts of nuts.
Obvious brag. All right. Well, now, since we don't know what this guy has, here's the deal. If we believe he has the full house, or the quads and did exactly as you said, just calling, hoping for us to bet out on the river no matter what came, then we have to bet out so he can raise us. If we believe he has the straight, we have to bet out because if we don't bet, he's going to check behind. So no matter what, we have to bet here, right?
Yeah, but the problem, I think, now is the bet sizing here.
Yeah.
Because you're right. If we really feel that he has the boat or quads, I think probably the best thing is to to do a little song and dance and then shove as if you're just trying to push him off the hand, right? Because you know he's going to call.
How do you do a song and dance online?
Well, you can do a song and dance.
Do you type in the lyrics to like?
Yeah, exactly. Put that little musical sign, but. But if we decide he has something weaker than that, we can't overshoot here. We gotta put out a bet that he can comfortably call, right?
Well, he started with 10, and we bet at least 250 on one street, so that makes him 750, and then we had raised to 30, so that gets him to 720, and then he bet 3/4 of the pot before when it was 60, so he's down to like $6 or $7, right?
I
bet
bucks,
$1, yeah,
yeah,
so seven. Yeah, so if you bet like, I'd bet like, I don't know, $2.75, $3 maybe. I don't think that's too much to ask for a straight to call there. It's not half.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying though. Is we got to. This is obviously we don't have to worry about winning the hand here,
right?
But we have to worry about trying to get as much value out of it, right?
That's what I mean. So the
so
least,
again, it kind of depends. But here's the thing: if you only bet 275 and he's got, I guess if he's got quads, he's probably going to raise us, right? So
yeah,
I guess it doesn't matter.
Full house or quads, he's raising us.
Yeah. So you're right. So yeah, we need to shoot for that. We need to play it as if he's got a weaker hand than like a straight or something, and try to get value out of him, knowing that if he's got a better, then he'll raise. Okay, that makes sense.
Plus, make it like a defensive bet too. Like
yeah, absolutely. No, that makes sense. I wasn't thinking about that.
Yeah. So 275. $3 is value bet, which isn't that bad. The pot's only $6.50. A third of the pot is plenty of a bet on the end.
Right.
If it was $100 and you said I want to bet 50 or 40, $40, that would be acceptable. So
yeah, I'd probably put $250 in because that's what I raised it to last time.
Yeah.
Just to keep it consistent. So I kind of do my bets consistent like that for lots of reasons. But and I'll be happy getting $250. I don't think it's really worth trying to squeeze an extra quarter out of them for $275.
Yeah, $250 looks pretty good. It looks like that's an acceptable bet. It's what I bet last hand, so it's sort of, and it looks almost automatic rather than thoughtful. And so the guy would, if he's got a bigger hand than just a straight, then he's going to raise us no matter what we bet anyway. So let's make it look like we're defensive here with like a,
right,
whatever. So $250 sounds okay.
Excellent. All right, well, we bet $350, and he says, to my delight, he shoves the remaining $7 of his stack.
I fold.
I don't want to embarrass the guy.
Yeah,
right?
It's embarrassing.
Obviously, we call, and he shows the queen of clubs, ten of clubs, so we hit the one-outer.
Yeah, quads didn't make sense just because of the preflop action, so right. Yeah, that makes sense. Queen, ten, he defended with it. He bet out because he was protecting it. And then when the board paired, he did exactly like you said, just called our raise after he bet out $1 because he wanted us to bet into him again on the river, knowing that he had, at the time, what, not exactly the nuts, but it was the nuts because he had queen 10 in his hand and he couldn't be beat. So makes total sense, queen 10, total sense. I don't know if it's the greatest hand ever or whatever, the most amazing hand ever, but it worked out nicely for you. I tell you, that's nice.
Well, here's the kicker. He's only been playing for 2 months. So
it's like the first
ever Royal.
Never played Lotto and wins on the first ticket.
Yeah, so, that first Royal is always the one you're going to remember. Yeah. Come within 2 months. I guarantee you I didn't get a Royal in my first 2 months land. So.
Yeah, no way. And you know what, too? There were some lessons to be learned here. So even though it was a Royal, it turned out to be... I mean, how many people hit a Royal flush and get action?
Yeah,
from a full house,
and not just action, but gets all the guys' chips.
It gets all the guys' chips when you've made the Royal. I mean,
that's amazing.
That's like bad beat stuff where you make six figures in a poker room.
Exactly.
Almost. That's pretty crazy. So nice job.
All right, Liam from England. We appreciate the hand of the week, and remember, everybody else, send them to podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
Another fine episode of the Antiup Podcast. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.